Nuclear radioactive trash, rubble, debris. That's what's left over when a nuclear manufacturing site closes down. And despite the Environmental Protection Agency and all those other government agencies promising cleanups, they never happen. Or if they are started, they are never successfully completed. Or if they are finished in the mind of the agency, they never successfully clean up the damage that has been done. And it's left to people, the community, to deal with the ongoing damage. How bad can it get? When it comes to the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant in Piketon, Ohio, pretty bad. And it takes a crusading journalist, someone who's done a deep dive into records, reports, and the numbers to figure it out. So when he tells us,
Pike County has the highest cancer rate of any area in the state of Ohio, and one of the highest cancer rates in the entire country. People are experiencing rare cancers that you only find in areas where there's been nuclear fallout, such as in Nevada from the test site areas. We're seeing these rare cancers, and there's been so many deaths of children, even. Back in 2019, Zions Corner Middle School was shut down because of radioactive contamination. And so many of the students and staff at that very school have sadly passed away. So the legacy of the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant is contamination, cancer, and death.
well, when journalist Jason Sally, who regularly files stories about the whole range of dangerous inner workings and failings at the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant, explains how that area is now targeted as a nuclear sacrifice zone, excuse me, nuclear hub is what those in power call it, and is ground zero in national nuclear plans despite the known dangers it already poses to the health and safety of anyone who lives near it, you get yet another glimpse of that awful, dangerous, deadly seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear, who want to know something, and people who know something about nuclear who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I am the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we learn about the latest on the Piketon, Ohio, Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant. This will be in our interview with journalist Jason Sally. He has been publishing almost nonstop stories about the difficult truths about this nuclear waste site, and then gives us advanced glimpses of two stories he's working on that have not yet broken. So you get to hear about them first here on Nuclear Hot Seat. We will also have nuclear news from around the world, Numbnuts of the Week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, Linda Pence Gunter with the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story, and more honest nuclear information than will ever be found on that $400 million golden jet gift, put that in quotes, to the President of the United States from the country of Qatar. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, May 13, 2025, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. In the U.S., the Trump administration is considering several executive orders aimed at speeding up the construction of nuclear power plants. As we say often on this show, the two things you don't want to hear in connection with nuclear power plants is faster and cheaper. As for the expense, one of the last attempts to build a nuclear power plant in the United States were two units at V.C. Summer in South Carolina, which were scuttled before they ever got into operation and cost over $9 billion, which the ratepayers of the state are still paying. In Navajo Nation, trucks carrying uranium ore from the Pinyon Plain mine have crossed into Navajo Nation, the tops of the trucks covered only by tarps. And on May 8th, one of them was stalled out because of a medical emergency with the truck driver. In Japan, a robotic arm designed to retrieve samples of melted fuel from the number 5 reactor may be scrapped after more than 6 years of development and 7.8 billion yen, or 53.1 million U.S. dollars in taxpayer money, because the dang thing isn't working as planned. Out of 880 tons of radioactive waste at Fukushima, only 0.7 of an ounce has yet been retrieved. There's a major push in the world to reopen the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine. But then there's the thought, Ukraine should do renewables instead. Here with the Nuclear Hot Seat Hot Story is Linda Pence Gunter.
In a thought-provoking article last week in the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists, Henry Sokolsky of the Non-Proliferation Policy Education Center tells us that the currently closed 6-reactor Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine is at the center of peace negotiations being brokered, supposedly, by the U.S. and between Ukraine and Russia. The Trump administration has certainly been tossing quite a few not-so-tasty carrots at Ukraine lately, including a demand to seize 50% of the profits from Ukraine's minerals production and to ship America's unwanted and unproven criminals, and for that, read migrants and immigrants of color, for incarceration in Ukraine. But control of the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plants is an equally bizarre aspiration. That's because it comes with an enormous list of immense complications, a list Sokolsky enumerates in his article. Whose nuclear plant actually is it? How badly is it damaged? Who will repair it, monitor it for safety and security, re-establish a cooling water source since the dam that fed it was destroyed, find a way to actually deliver the electricity it generates, demine the surrounding area, repair damaged control room equipment, regulate safety, and guarantee the plant is not again caught up in and damaged by war? How long will all this take? And above all, and especially if something goes drastically wrong there, who will pay for it? Let's remember we are dealing with the largest nuclear power plant in Europe at 5,700 megawatts. None of this is going to be easy or quick, and certainly not cheap. Just reading Sokolsky's list prompts only one sensible answer: leave the nuclear power plant idle and replace it with renewables instead. Ukraine needs energy fast, given that currently more than half the reactors it relies on for 55% of its electricity supply are idled due to the war or for maintenance. Bringing on renewables, which can take even a few months and at most 2 to 3 years, is the obvious choice. No need for safeguards either, no fears of accidental radiation releases or deliberate sabotage. But Ukraine isn't going that route. Even in the midst of the war, Ukraine has signaled its intention to build as many as 9 new Westinghouse AP1000 reactors at all 4 of its existing nuclear sites, yes, even at Zaporizhzhia. Clearly, the compulsion to continue on with nuclear power in the face of all of these obstacles has nothing to do with what's good for Ukraine or the rest of us. It's all about the art of the deal, or should that be steal, and the profits to be made by corporations and governments. As M.V. Ramana reminds us in his excellent book, Nuclear is Not the Solution, nuclear power will continue on as long as we, the taxpayers, and often the ratepayers too, pay for it. There may also be another reason why Ukraine clings on to nuclear power. It gave back its Soviet nuclear weapons to Russia, but maintaining the nuclear materials, technology, personnel, and know-how provided by the civil sector keeps Ukraine inside the nuclear club, with the possibility of nuclear weapons still, if not necessarily easily, within reach. I'm Linda Pence Gunter with Beyond Nuclear, reporting for Nuclear Hot Seat. And that's this week's Hot Story.
We'll have this week's featured interview in just a moment, but first, what bothers you most about nuclear? Weapons? Forever dangerous quantities of highly radioactive waste? Cancer threats? Contamination of land that many of us live near, if not on? And do you want to help challenge and change these dangers and find a way out of the nuclear madness? Then you need Nuclear Hot Seat. We cover the nuclear threats you face to health, welfare, and safety, and what you, what we, what any of us can do about it. Every week, we bring you the kind of nuclear information that mainstream media just doesn't seem to have the heart or time or money to put on the air or in print. Our stories have been sourced, checked, and footnoted, and then we add interviews with genuine experts on the nuclear industry and its impact on life, health, and our shared genetic future. We also tell you about people on the front lines of activism around the world, their triumphs, challenges, and how you can join and help. But we can't keep doing this alone. This is where you come in. Nuclear Hot Seat runs exclusively on donations and cannot survive without your support. So if you're grateful for the information you get from the show, now is the time to help us out. Be it a one-time donation or a monthly recurring gift, with any amount, you'll be supporting the services required to keep this program running. Nuclear Hot Seat is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means that your donation is tax deductible. And we make it easy. Go to nuclearhotseat.com, click on the red donate button, or you can send directly to us via Zelle at info@nuclearhotseat.com. No amount is too small, no amount is too large, so don't wait. Go to nuclearhotseat.com to donate now and help keep our nuclear news online. Whatever you can do to help, I'm deeply grateful that you're listening and that you care. Now, here's this week's featured interview. Jason Sally is an investigative journalist known for his hard-hitting reporting on environmental contamination and government oversight. With a focus on uncovering the hidden truths of Appalachia, his work has exposed decades of radioactive pollution and corporate negligence at the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant. Sally's fearless storytelling and relentless pursuit of the facts have made him a powerful voice for the communities impacted by America's nuclear legacy. A few acronyms snuck into our talk, so to clear up any confusion ahead of time, PORTS refers to the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant. RECA is the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, legislation which would provide government financial assistance for those harmed by exposure to radiation from U.S. nuclear weapons production. And a reminder that when we refer to SMRs or SMNRs, small modular nuclear reactors, none of these have ever been built. The designs are not approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and they don't exist outside of slick propaganda sales pitches to naive and ignorant governments. I spoke with Jason Sally on May 9, 2025. Jason Sally, it is so great to finally meet you and have you here on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor and privilege to be here.
Let's start out with finding out a bit more about you. What is your background and how did you get into reporting?
Well, I was born and raised here in Southern Ohio, and about 5 years ago, kind of looking for a little different direction. I was always good at writing. That was always my little forte in college. So I got involved with a new online publication here in Chillicothe, Ohio, where I'm from. And as part of that, we started getting into a lot of environmental stuff. I didn't know at the time how contaminated and how dirty certain parts of Southern Ohio was until I started investigating in the news. And from there, we just kept digging. And that's kind of how I got involved in the news world.
How long ago was that that you became aware of the contamination in Southern Ohio?
Well, the first time I learned about the contamination, especially from the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant, was around 2015, when the issue about having an on-site radioactive dump in Southern Ohio really started gaining traction. And people started fighting that. And I remember certain activist groups coming to our local city council meeting to discuss it. And the evidence they laid out was just overwhelming. And so many people with our city council all agreed that it was just the worst idea possible to put a radioactive dump in this region. that's when I really first became aware of how serious the situation was in this area. And it really inspired me to keep doing more and keep digging to learn the truth and educate myself as well as others.
For those listeners who may not be fully aware of what the problems are, give us a sense of the history of the site and what's wrong with it.
Well, the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant was originally part of the Manhattan Project. The whole purpose was to enrich uranium from the nation's nuclear weapons program. This started in the late 1950s, and over the years, the plant enriched tons and tons of uranium for our nuclear program. Then in the 1990s, during the megatons, megawatts program, where we started bringing in Russian material, the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant then became a hub to reprocess old nuclear material from the Russian warheads. The site has had a lengthy history of high-assay enriched uranium for nuclear weapons, all the way down to low-grade enriched uranium. And during this time, the site released thousands and thousands of pounds of deadly uranium hexafluoride, plutonium, technetium. The entire community has just been saturated by fallout from this Cold War era enrichment facility here in southern Ohio.
How recently has the site been active, and when did concerns about cleanup come to the fore?
From the research I've done, really on in the early 80s was when people started becoming concerned about contamination coming from the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion site. The EPA finally got involved and started really putting the bricks to DOE, saying, we know how dirty this site is, and it's time to start remediating it. But at the same time, the plant was still enriching weapons-grade material. We didn't see an end to that until the late 1990s, just really before the plant shut down in 2001.
How soon after the plant was shut down was any attempt made to clean up the site?
There was really never a strong attempt to start decontaminating and demolishing the site until around 2010. That's when DOE had all the property transferred back to itself from the USEC company, who was in control. They was the last contractor enriching uranium at the site. Once it got back into DOE's hands, then the process of remediation and coming up with plans to remediate the site began. And during that time, there were so many different options available to basically not just remediate the site, but clean it up enough to where it could be used. A prime example was a study done by the Ohio University about a solar farm being placed at Quartz, which would have been a great idea, but unfortunately, there was no money in it for the nuclear industry.
So it seems that the nuclear industry has the upper hand, the whip hand, as it were, when it comes to making decisions about this site.
Absolutely. And all the leaders and all the politicians are right there in their back pocket and went along with anything that the Department of Energy wanted. That has been the premise at Quartz for generations. And even now, DOE is set on cleaning up a site just to make it dirty again.
So any cleanup that has been done has just been a cleanup in name only, and in essence has been kicking the problem down the road.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what's happening. They're beginning to transfer parcels to private companies that are interested in the land at Quartz. This land they're transferring is highly contaminated, and the Department of Energy, the EPA, the Ohio Department of Health, all these agencies know this, and they're allowing it to happen. There's just so much money involved in play at Quartz that they don't want anybody or anything interfering with their plan.
So it really comes down to the nuclear industry and its money running what is happening there. Let's flip this over. For the citizens who are in the area, what has been the nature of their complaints and what are some of the things that they have been dealing with?
Well, recently in 2024, epidemiologist Joe Mangano, he's well renowned. His studies have been instrumental in showing how Pike County has the highest cancer rate of any area in the state of Ohio and one of the highest cancer rates in the entire country. people are experiencing rare cancers that you only find in areas where there's been nuclear fallout, such as in Nevada from the test site areas. We're seeing these rare cancers, and there's been so many deaths of children even. Back in 2019, Zons Corner Middle School was shut down because of radioactive contamination. And so many of the students and staff at that very school have sadly passed away. So the legacy of the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant is contamination, cancer, and death.
With the kind of backup that you're getting from Joe Mangano, who's been a guest on this show many times, he's one of my primary sources, and the complaints that have come very justifiably from the people living in the area, has there been any response from government?
No. The government continues to say everything is fine in Southern Ohio. The water, the air, the soil, there's nothing here. There's no problems. And that's the same kind of PR that they've been giving to people that even live along the fence line. Just recently, we found out the DOE has a special envoy that's going door to door trying to tell the fence liners everything's fine, that the plant is here for you. We're here to support you. It's literally a slap in the face of common sense, because everybody in this area knows somebody who has died of cancer. It's horrible. This is a community that has truly been sacrificed in the name of corporate greed and nuclear ambition.
There has been a plan proposed or floated, or perhaps it's being instituted now, that the state of Ohio wants to make Piketon and the area around the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant a nuclear zone, a nuclear hub. What is happening about that?
Right now, Piketon is becoming the geopolitical nuclear capital of the world. Billions of dollars are being poured into centrists and their How You demonstration, as well as the plans by Oklo, a startup company that has plans to build two experimental small modular reactors at ports in order to help fund centrists. But at the same time, that's not all. There's plans for a data center as well as a hydrogen production facility, all on this same contaminated parcel of land.
Let's back this up a little bit, because you had in some of our communication mentioned centrists being your biggest concern. What are they? What are they doing? And what's so wrong about it?
Well, Centrist is the only company in the United States licensed to produce high assay, low enriched uranium. It's HALEU, the coveted new nuclear fuel for all the small modular reactors, all the advanced reactors, and even our nuclear submarines. Right now, Centrist has plans to rebuild a commercial operation in Pike County. Their goal is to have over 10,000 centrifuges rocking and rolling, producing this HALEU material, and then sending it across the country to companies such as TerraPower, who have plans for these small SMRs. So right now, the whole spotlight is on Centrist, who wants to expand and, like I said, clean up a site to make it dirty again. That's exactly what Centrist is doing by bringing commercial uranium enrichment back to Pike County.
It occurs to me that they're going to, if they follow through on this, have a very large population of skilled workers and scientists and engineers and the like that are going to have to live in the area. Isn't that awfully dangerous to the long-term survival of anybody that they would bring in?
Oh, absolutely it is. But at the same time, most of these workers are coming from out of state and they're not being sourced locally. But at the same time, they're selling the jobs that this is going to be the savior of Pike County. We're bringing back jobs that were lost in 2001 when the plant shut down. That's their whole PR campaign and what they're trying to sell. So they are setting up a whole new generation of radiated workers, and we're repeating this vicious cycle that's already happened time and time again before.
And this is at a time when the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, which was to give funding to those people who had been irradiated through Manhattan Project and Cold War exposure to nuclear radiation, has expired. there's a push to try and get it passed, which is being resisted strongly, specifically by Republicans in our government, in the House and in the Senate. And this would create a whole new generation that ultimately would be eligible for this kind of compensation, but it's off the table. Is there anybody in mainstream media, has there been any kind of mainstream media response to this that gives it a context, that gives it clarity, so people have a fighting chance of knowing what they're up against?
No, there really hasn't been any mainstream coverage. Outside of Ohio, nobody has mentioned the area, and there's been a large push to get RECA, especially Pike County included, a community that's been radiated for 70 years. But at the same time, it would take the United States government admitting that they poisoned a community and they knew about it. And that's why they don't want RECA in places like Pike County and neighboring Scioto County, because they don't want to have to admit that. Because when they do, that means the billions of dollars being poured into these projects may dry up. Because who wants to come to a radiated town that's been officially called radiated by the United States government? Why would they want to come here to work? Why would there be any tourism? They want to rebuild that 1950s atomic boom era all over again, and they're using Pike County as the centerpiece for that.
Sounds like a sacrificial goat to them. In terms of public pushback on this, what form has it taken? Has it been limited to some local activists holding up hand-printed signs outside of hearings or other places? Has it been more organized? Is there a legal aspect to this?
Well, over the years, there's been several lawsuits filed. There was one large one that was settled out of court for an undisclosed amount of money. But at the same time, there's been several activists who's been instrumental in trying to stop and expose what DOE has done to this community. Right now, we're seeing more of an organized push, especially with the cancer survivors who want answers. I've talked to so many parents who have lost their children, and there's nothing more heartbreaking than another father looking into the eyes of another father who's crying, telling you how much they miss their son and how they wish they could take them fishing just one more time. So right now we're seeing the victims finally starting to get a voice and starting to gain some traction. And we're hoping that just somebody will give a damn here about Southern Ohio.
How successful do you think the local groups have been in raising this issue in a way that is being covered? For example, I know that Dwayne Pullman, who's with WKRC, a CBS affiliate in Cincinnati, has been as spot on, I think, as a television reporter can be in covering this issue. Is he the exception? And if so, how exceptional is the job he's doing?
Dwayne is doing an amazing job. It's a great honor to be able to work with him to expose what's going on in Southern Ohio. Dwayne has a commitment that I haven't seen from any other media outlet or reporter. It takes somebody who has a passion to want to help people and to expose the truth, to be able to have a commitment the way Dwayne has. And unfortunately, we're not seeing much of that outside of Local 12 and myself and a few other news outlets. But on a national level, no, you won't see Fox News talking about Piketon unless it's about the money coming in and all these new jobs that they're promising. That's the only time you're going to hear about Piketon. It's sad, but unfortunately, it's reality. And for years, so many activists and whistleblowers have fought, but we are fighting a machine with unlimited resources, unlimited funds, backed by our own federal government.
What is next in the battle? Are there any lawsuits currently being posed? Is there any change of legislation? Do we have something to put some energy behind?
Yes, there's a couple lawsuits coming from families who have lost children. Right now, they're gaining and building evidence to submit to federal court, such as testing the drinking water in Pike County, which is a really hot topic because the county water has never been tested for things such as beta emitters. They do standardized EPA testing, such as for radon and other organic compounds, but they have never tested for beta emitters.
And to be specific, a beta emitter is?
Beta emitter is a type of radiation that It's easily blocked by clothing and material, but it is very deadly when it's ingested, especially technetium-99, which is a fissionable product. It's a byproduct of nuclear weapons manufacturing. And this is so heavily saturated in Pike County that I have never seen a community this saturated by such a man-made element as we're seeing down there. And the thing about technetium, it's very water soluble. It will travel through water. It will travel through the aquifers. It will travel through people's wells and their plumbing in their home. But the EPA, the Ohio Department of Health, has refused to test independently. They have relied on the Department of Energy testing their on-site water. And when the Department of Energy says everything's fine, the EPA gives a thumbs up and puts their stamp of approval on it. Recently, I asked the EPA the very question about why they don't test for things such as technetium in the water. And their answer was, well, if alpha emitters such as radon and all these other natural elements aren't showing up in high levels, well, we can pretty much say there's no other elements in this water. And I asked the press secretary, how can you say with confidence and tell the people of Pike County that there is no radioactive elements in their water and that their water is truly safe? And the answer I got, well, that was simply crickets.
Yeah, we're hearing a lot from the crickets lately on nuclear issues. Have the cuts that DOGE has been making within government had any impact on the situation in Piketon?
Yes, actually, at the last site-specific advisory board meeting, this is where the community is supposed to be able to engage with the contractors that are demolitioning ports. The 2026 budget is still in the air. They don't know if they're going to get any funding to continue this project of cleaning up the Portsmouth gaseous diffusion plant. Right now, DOGE hasn't cut into their funding yet, and I emphasize the word yet. We know they're making cuts across the board. Well, who's to say that the billions of dollars that are pouring into this cleanup operation may be looked at as an unneeded expenditure, and that money may dry up. So there's a lot in the air right now, and even the employees, many of them have been laid off lately because the future is unknown. This site may never be completely cleaned up. It may just be kicked down the road and passed off to these corporations that are coming in with new projects, not knowing what they're stepping into.
And not taking responsibility for the cleanup, as we've seen in so many other locations around the country. And just my observation as regards funding for anything nuclear, that's probably the last thing that will be cut from anywhere because there's some power and strength behind the nuclear cabal that keeps itself going. And if money's cut, it's not going to be from there.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. But we're also afraid that they will cut corners in the safety during the cleanup operations. They've already lied to the public during the waste disposal, the building of it. Just last year, I had to find in an EPA report that there was a fire at the on-site radioactive dump. The community was never made aware of that. Local officials were never made aware of that. And I'm sorry, I believe it's very important to tell folks when there is a fire at a radioactive dump just next door to them.
I live in Los Angeles and in close proximity with the Santa Susana Field Lab. And when the Woolsey fire broke out, which was, I believe, in 2019, it started on the site of the Santa Susana Field Lab, which is a former Rocketdyne site. They had reactor meltdowns, experimental reactor meltdowns. They had burn pits that had radioactive material in. And when the fire started there, immediately the anti-nuclear people said, wait a minute, you've got to worry about radionuclides. I have a friend who works for
Southern California Edison.
and the very same day that the fire broke out, within 5 hours of it breaking out, I ran into her. We walk our dogs in the same place. And I told her I was very alarmed about this. And she told me at that point, oh, you have nothing to worry about. There's nothing there. You're just blah, 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 blah. That was fine. It was still burning. And in the research that was done after the fact, There were samples taken, dust and ash samples taken by the local community in a highly scientific, regulated way. They were tested. Particles of plutonium were found as far as 9.5 miles away in Sherman Oaks. And that was with a limited number of samples because they had to come up with their own money for the testing. So we know that that happens. And if they're saying that there was a fire at the port site and it wasn't reported and they're trying to say that nothing happened, something happened. They're in denial, they're lying, or they're just malicious as all get out.
And that's been the history of the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant. In 1998, there was a fire in the X-326 building. This building is where they enriched the uranium hex fluoride to weapons-grade material. This building had nuclear weapons-grade material inside of it when this fire occurred. But DOE and the contractors said nothing was wrong. It was a 2-hour fire caused by a converter that had melted and the aluminum reacted with the UF6 gas and set a chain reaction off inside the cascade, causing this fire. I found documents just this week that just 2 months prior, they had 97% assay nuclear weapons grade material in that building, in that area where the fire was. But yet, during the fire, they never called for outside assistance. The community was never notified. There was no warning. So this is not the first time that DOE has lied to this community right in their face and covered up what could have been a localized Chernobyl-like exposure. We could have had Pike County become a fallout zone that would be unlivable for generations. But they never admitted to it. And even today, they say the only thing that burned inside that building was oil.
Who do you write for? Are you hired by someone? Are you a freelancer? Do you just take your frustrations out in print and then get it online? What is it that is motivating you? Because I have seen your stories and your posts all over the place, especially in the last 2 months.
Well, I'm actually freelancing right now. I do have two online publications, the OhioAtomicPress.com and then the appareport.com. My passion is the environment because we live on this planet. It's the only planet we're going to have. This is our only home. And I hate to see corporations exploit our beautiful natural resources, especially in Appalachia. Appalachia has been exploited. The poverty of Appalachia has been exploited for generations, for well over 100 years. And it's a vicious cycle that continues to this very day. And we see that in places like Pike County. And it angers me tremendously to see this continue to go on because I don't want to see people die from cancer that could be prevented if the government just cared, told the truth, and stopped what they was doing. I've lived in this area all my life. I'm raising a family. I don't want my kids to grow up in a toxic mess. I don't want to see my kids contract cancer. I remember as a teenager delivering pizzas to the atomic plant, not knowing, having a single clue what they was actually doing. But I took the pizzas right to the guard shack every time they ordered. So that's why this is personal to me. Because this is my home. This is where my children play. In fact, one of my kids, their best friend, attended Zions Corner Middle School and died of a rare form of leukemia. So this is real personal. I don't like seeing kids hurt. I don't like seeing people taken advantage of. And that's why I'll stand in the gap and fight against what they're trying to do in Pike County and what they've done for the last 70 years.
When you go to that site, what do to protect yourself? Are you wearing a mask? Do you have a respirator?
Yes, there's times I do wear a mask. I wish I would have worn one yesterday when I took a trip around the back roads near the plant. There was a very heavy smell in the air, something I had never experienced before, almost like a graphite. That's all I could describe it as, was pencil lead smell. And it was in three particular areas, known areas that have had reported contamination and high cancer rates. There's a road not too far from the plant called Hodge Lane. Geographically, topography, this site is a bowl. And just on the other side of the hill is the Sludge Lagoon, what they used to call Atomic Lake, where all the nasty stuff was poured into it, treated, and then leached into little tiny tributaries that ran down the hill into people's very backyards. I went down this road just yesterday and saw children's toys in that very creek, knowing what's coming down that hill. And we just had heavy rain here in southern Ohio, a lot of flooding. What all has washed down there just this week? What are kids playing in? What are these families walking in? The contamination is everywhere, and they know it, and they've allowed it, and it pisses me off.
We're fortunate to have someone as articulate and as good with writing and getting the word out as you, getting that pissed off because that is what it takes. Now, you are working on additional stories as well. Tell us about what midnight rockets are and how they play into this story.
For many years, workers have reported and claimed that there was venting that was going on from the process buildings, and they would do it at nighttime. And for years, it was just a story. But recently, I discovered some internal documents from the union down at the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion site back in 1994, talking about a 164-foot tall smokestack that was just outside the south end of the X-326 building. And in these records, they talk about it was necessary to purge the cascade from time to time. And they would vent these emissions using air jets and shoot them up this 164-foot stack. Well, what was mixed in with that venting and that material were things such as technetium-99, but also they was releasing highly enriched weapons grade uranium and venting it through that stack. Towards the end of late 1990s, when the Megatons Megawatts program was coming to an end, they began switching the cascade from the production of weapons grade material down to low enriched uranium to blend down this higher enriched stuff. As part of that, they would have to clean the cascade. To do that, they had to vent it to purge the lines. And four of those purge vents tied into that tall stack. So basically, the midnight rockets was nuclear fallout. Pike County was getting radiated and nuked nightly during this time period. And DOE knew it. In fact, they even had a vent committee whose goal and entire purpose was to measure how far the emissions would travel. They purposely shot this radioactive stuff up that vent, all in the name of cleaning out the cascade so they can run more material through it, make more money. All the while, fallout was raining down on the residents of Pike County.
And when was that taking place?
This was taking place during the 80s and 90s. The last I heard before they reconfigured the cascade and the vent system was around 1998. Just before the fire. But also, this fire was not very far from this same 164-foot tall stack. Well, this confirms what people have said in various lawsuits for years, that the Department of Energy knew what was going on, they knew about the emissions, and they permitted it. The documents state that USEC, the last contractor who had the plant, was responsible for 85% of the emission inside that building. The other percentage was directly from DOE's operation as they was purging that cascade and venting this radioactive mess and radiating and nuking Pike County.
This is such an extreme example of the kind of, boy, I'm coming up short on words here. The kind of manipulation, the kind of lack of taking responsibility, the kind of callous disregard for human life that shows up so frequently when dealing with anything nuclear. And there is another story that had my jaw dropping that you told me that you were working on that I'd like you to share now. It's about your working with Dr. Michael Ketterer, who, again, is someone who has been a guest on this show many times. He is a retired PhD analytical chemist with expertise concerning detecting radioactive isotopes in soil. It was his work that discovered the radioactive americium contamination in Zions Corner Middle School, which was just 4 miles away from Ports, and led to that school's closure. What are you working on regarding Dr. Ketterer's work now?
Well, Dr. Ketterer also recently released a report about the uptick of neptunium and plant matter around the Portsmouth site. So it got me thinking, just on the other side of the northern fence line is a lumber yard. Now, here in Chillicothe, Ohio, we have a paper mill. It's been here for 100 years. But in the early 1990s, DOE leased a good portion of acreage to the Meade Corporation, that's who originally owned our paper plant, for timber use, to cut down harvest timber and to use it as a shipping point. This site, when I say is just on the other side of the fence line of the atomic plant, it literally is. Some of the white pine trees that were planted around Ports as a buffer to help absorb some of the off-site radioactive contaminants has been harvested and is in their lumber yard. So it had me thinking, if these trees, especially white pines, which is known to absorb radioactive isotopes, if they're harvesting this timber, sending it to a paper mill, and processing it into paper, what's the risk and chance of fissionable material being found in that final product? What's the risk to the workers who are in this facility making this paper? That have no clue that possibly contaminated lumber from just a few miles south may even be making them sick. So, right now, I've talked with Dr. Ketterer to kind of create a game plan on trying to locate final product and testing it and seeing if there is any traces of fissionable material, such as technetium-99, that we know is so prevalent in Pike County. So, right now, it's a very hot issue because our paper plant is about to be shut down. The hedge fund that owns it announced that they are closing it and laying everybody off. But they gave them a lifeline till the end of the year. But as part of this shutdown, they're going to move machines, material to other facilities that this hedge fund owns. Could there be cross-contamination? What's the risk at other facilities? So there's a lot of unknowns. Because the problem is when we talk about nuclear goes on forever. The contamination just continues down the supply chain. It's an evil entity, in my opinion. So what is the risk? Because Meade Corporation was one of America's favorite paper manufacturers. I remember buying their products for my kids when they went to school, the notebooks, the notepads, all that stuff. Made right here in Chillicothe. So, what's the risk of this radiated lumber being put into the supply chain and ending up in American homes?
That's quite the story, and I look forward to staying in touch with you and finding out what's happening on it because we know that there's no way to reuse anything nuclear without still dealing with the problems of radiation and what it can do. And the further problem is that it then becomes disguised because you don't know where it's been or where this came from, and suddenly we have mystery illnesses showing up in families, in children, in workers, in people who live in the community. So, Jason, my hat's off to you for the important work that you are doing, for the passion that you bring to it, the thoroughness you bring to it. And this is not the last time we will be talking, but for now, I want to thank you for being my guest this week on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you. It was truly an honor to be here, and I appreciate it.
Investigative journalist Jason Salley. We will have links up to his website and Facebook account where you can check out the many articles that he has been publishing. In covering the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant, I would be remiss not to mention the frontline activists and groups that have been fighting for justice regarding the site who have served as sources on these stories. Bina Kali is a self-described sick worker from the Portsmouth Gaseous Diffusion Plant. She is co-founder of National Nuclear Workers for Justice and Portsmouth Piketon Residents for Environmental Safety and Security, or PRESS. Bina Kali has been fighting for cleanup and treatment for workers for 40 years. Gina Doyle is a lifelong Pike County resident and admin of the Facebook group Don't Dump On Us, which has been extremely active of late. We will have links up to both of these and also the Ohio Nuclear Free Network on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 724.
Activists, shout out.
Fukushima Fallout Awareness Network and its stalwart leader, Kim Roberson, want you to know that the U.S. limit for carcinogenic radioactive cesium in food is 1,200 becquerels per kilogram, whereas Japan, which suffered the triple meltdown at Fukushima, has a limit of 100 becquerels per kilogram. So the U.S. can legally sell food that is 12 times more radioactive than what is legal in Japan. That's not right. And Fukushima Fallout Awareness Network has filed an official citizens petition to the FDA to put important safeguards into motion. Fans May Day campaign needs your signature, and they're asking you to sign. Go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the link that we have there, and you can sign the Move On petition to lower current allowable limits of cancer-causing cesium-134 and 137 in food. Again, this is coming from Fukushima Fallout Awareness Network, which is a project of the National Institute for Science, Law, and Public Policy. The Peace Resource Center at Wilmington College in Wilmington, Ohio, invites conference proposals from scholars, artists, and nuclear activists to present work inspired by archival research related to nuclear histories at their upcoming 50th anniversary conference. The Peace Resource Center is the only archive and academic center in the United States wholly devoted to the human experience of nuclear war as regards the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, on August 6 and 9, 1945. The conference, Archives as Witness, Memory and Art in Nuclear Histories, celebrates the founding of the PRC and will be held on September 30th and October 1st, 2025. Organized panels or individual presentations from artistic, humanistic, and social science disciplines should focus on the legacies of atomic weapons, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, nuclear disarmament, and related topics. They welcome traditional academic panels, but they also invite alternative formats that highlight artistic practices, fine arts, dance, music, film, photography, or any other medium. We're going to have a link up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 724, where you'll be able to find a complete description of what is required and the proposal submission form. The deadline is June 16. I will be there with my play, Atomic Bill and the Payment Due, and I hope I will be seeing some of you there. A shout out to the International Uranium Film Festival, about to begin its Mothership presentation in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, on May 17 and running through the 31st. Guests, and all under the aegis of the festival co-founders, Norbert Suchanek and Marcia Gomez de Oliveira. Know that the IUFF is a traveling film festival and can show up in a city or a country near you by you reaching out to them. They can be found at uraniumfilmfestival.com. And know that they are always looking for new films and new locations where they can present these films. To get in contact with them, go to uraniumfilmfestival.com. There's a contact space there. Reach out to them. They're great people. It's a wonderful event and really gives a boost to any local community that produces them. And speaking of films, I've got a doozy for you if you're not yet aware of it. On Amazon Prime, there's a documentary called The Conqueror: Hollywood Fallout. It's about Hollywood's infamous racist, sexist flop, The Conqueror, starring John Wayne as Genghis Khan. That gives you an idea how politically incorrect this thing was. But it's worse than that. The Howard Hughes-produced film was shot outside St. George, Utah, just 2 years after the above-ground nuclear explosion nicknamed Dirty Harry. Due to a miscalculation and change in wind direction, this test released an unusually large amount of fallout, the highest of any test in the continental U.S., much of which accumulated in the vicinity of St. George. And that's not counting the other 99 above ground tests that took place in Nevada that also deposited fallout. The cast and crew of The Conqueror totaled 220 people, and at least 90 subsequently died of cancer, including John Wayne, Susan Hayward, and Agnes Moorehead. This documentary connects the dots to present one of the best, most thorough tellings of the consequences of above ground nuclear testing and fallout on unwitting victims. With special guest appearances by St. George journalist, dramatist, and activist Mary Dixon, and biologist Mary Olson of Gender and Radiation Impact Project, both multiple interviewees and sources here on Nuclear Hot Seat. So go to Amazon Prime, check out The Conqueror: Hollywood Fallout. It's an eye-opener. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, May 13, 2025. If you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email every week, it's easy. You can sign up for it on your favorite podcast channel or cut to the chase and help us out by going to nuclearhotseat.com. There's a big yellow box that pops up, and if you put in your first name and email address and send it to us, every week we will send you one, just one email that contains a link to that week's show and a short description of its content. That way you will always be able to catch each week's Nuclear Hot Seat as soon as it posts. Now, there's another way you can help us out. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, thank you. Any amount will help us out, and we really appreciate your support. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2025, Libby, Halevy, and Hardis Street Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed as long as you cite the program, website, names of any guests whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevy of Nuclear Hot Seat, reminding you, ignoring the impact of nuclear radiation on our lives and health doesn't change the scientific facts of the damage it's doing to us. It just keeps us trapped in the danger until and unless we're willing to learn the truth and fight for a way out. That's it. You have just had your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do not go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are leaking. Nuclear hot seat. It's da bomb.